The people that should have received this money are long gone. Those were the days when I remember living in the village of Golovin. There were no jobs. The men had to walk to Nome to go to work at the gold company, USSNR it was called then. And then they, in the fall time, they would walk home and they'd build a fire across the bay. And when we saw a fire burning, we knew that someone had walked home, and we'd go across with a boat and get them. When I would go to visit my girlfriends, they didn't have cocoa or juice or stuff like that to drink. And there was no welfare then. They would heat water and just put some sugar in it, and that was their drink. But they were happy with that. But a lot of us are spoiled now. We've had it too easy. I used to work with the reindeer, and I worked hard with the reindeer. There is a lot of money spent to keep the reindeer going. When you take and compare how much money is being spent for reindeer and so few are benefiting from it, and that's actually our tax dollars that are keeping the reindeer going. I think if you'd let them become caribou and join the caribou and get the caribou down here, I think we'd be further ahead. And people could go out and get so many caribou. Well, we're allowed 5 caribou a day, according to Fish and Game. I don't know if that's an error, but for someone to come in from the lower 48, it's $300 to shoot a caribou or $300 to get a moose. And that's about all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. By the way, my point about subsistence was that if you lose the native corporation land and it becomes land in the hands of outsiders, they would have the right to restrict or even prohibit subsistence activities on that land. You'd still have the right to exercise your subsistence rights on state and federal land, whatever those rights may be, and of course your rights to the fishery. Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
My name is Robbie Fagerstrom, president of Sitnasauk Native Corporation. And on behalf of the corporation and the shareholders, I'd like to thank you for this opportunity for our comments to be heard. My comments here today are all factual. And Sitnasauk is the village corporation for Nome. We currently have 2,613 shareholders on our rolls, and we were authorized 205,400 shares. A special note, effective January 1, 1985, we will be maintaining our own stock maintenance records here in Nome. Our corporation has land entitlements of 161,280 acres. As of this date, we have received interim conveyance to 108,086 acres and patents to 43,400. As a special note, the subsurface rights are owned by the regional corporation. However, we have a security interest which protects the subsurface minerals or rights on our selected lands. As of the point, I think all the village corporations in our region have the same agreement. The board of directors is comprised of 11 members who have 3-year staggered terms, in which there are 3 groups. The 5 officers are elected annually by the directors for a 1-year term. The board has established committees to assist in review and recommendations to the board on investments, proposals, issues, policies, and other corporate affairs. And currently we have 6 standing committees. Sitting Sock's current investment strategy and operating policy since inception is to invest only within Nome and the immediate area. With the exception, we have our banking investment portfolios. The corporation has declared annual dividends since 1980, which amounts to $465 per 100 shares of stock owned. Sitting Sock operations include, we have 66 rental units or apartments, a finance company, and this was created to stimulate retail sales within our operating companies, a construction company, which we had the ARCO labor contract for offshore on our supply barge this past summer during their first exploration year. And we had 8 of the 12 employees were shareholders. Our construction company with a joint venture partner was the low bidder on a small state road project in the summer of 1982. We have a reindeer herd, but currently we are looking at a management contract for the actual operations of the herd on our range. It's been real difficult for the corporation to be operating the reindeer herd. So the corporation has a well-established scholarship program for our shareholders. Assistance is given to full-time college students, vocational training, and part-time students at the Northwest Community College here in Nome. Must also might add is when there is board training, we do try to coordinate the training through the community college as a vehicle. The shareholders through our campsite lease program are offered a 10,000 square feet parcel for either subsistence or recreational campsites, and these leases are renewable on a year-to-year basis. Our newsletter venture is published quarterly for our shareholders, and it provides information and education on issues. And Sitting Sock has a business subsidiary company which is 100% wholly owned, and this is Nome Native Community Enterprises Incorporated. The operating company is a retail and service-oriented businesses. The company officers and directors are the common directors of Sitting Sock, and all stores give a 10% senior citizens discount on cash sales of merchandise and fuel purchases, with the exception that we do have a $100 maximum discount on recreational vehicles, cars, boats, motors, and trailers. Our operating companies as follows. We have Bonanza Store, which is auto parts, and also is recreational sales and parts. Included is a service station, a shop, Bonanza Fuel, and Bonanza Rent-A-Car, and also car sales. The Nome Hardware is a franchise True Value store, which has some 15,000 items in its inventory. The Country Store is a home building center, which has an inventory of building materials and supplies, appliances, furniture, carpet and vinyl, and electrical and plumbing supplies. A self-service gas station with the recent addition of case lot grocery sales. And we have just recently completed, next to the Country Store, a 4,800 square feet cold storage warehouse. In closing, I know that you do have our results of our 1991 survey.
Yeah, thank you, and I've read it. It's very interesting, and I indicated earlier we would like to make it part of the record of these proceedings.
Right. And also, we have our 1983 annual report.
Thank you.
I know that in closing that these are my personal views. I realize that there are confusing issues, and I think it takes the corporation to make use of our newsletter to get the information out. We do meet monthly. We have a work session on a regular board of directors meeting monthly. And we do have committee meetings, and I think it's important that the shareholders, if they have concerns, that they should make them aware to us, and we would just try to do our best to make the right decisions on their behalf, and I'd just like to thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Judge Berger. My name is Alfred Nuckuck. I'm from St. Michael. And I've got a basic amount of background with reference to the issues of land claims and a lot of the groundwork which went into the designing of the Land Claims Act of 1971, the subsistence law which was passed in 1977 through the state of Alaska, and some certain observations with reference to the impact of land claims on us people. And by actual design, probably some of the built-in faults with reference to the actual implementation of the Land Claims Act. The difficulty that I feel with reference to us and the fact that we are forced into a position of having to make decisions with reference to title, ownership, use and occupancy of these properties which have historically been ours is that we're put in a position of competing with corporate America, which has had the past 200 years in which to develop its own policies and designs on how to run America, and forced with reference to coming to modern times and having 20 years in which to make decisions which normally take years and years of planning. The difficulty I have with reference to the Land Claims Act is it was convenient, and the only reason that the Land Claims Act passed was because of the subsurface estate in Alaska, not because it was good for the natives to have title. It just happens that it was an exchange of 40 million acres, $962.5 million in exchange for better than $25 billion worth of subsurface estate, which has come to the surface so far. And there's another $50 or $100 billion worth of other resources which have not yet been tapped. And so the price paid to the Alaska Natives for the ability to recover these resources is cheap compared to the actual profits which are being enjoyed by the companies which are in the resource extraction business, and which gets back down to the cycle of the fact that it turned out it was a good deal for them as opposed to it being a good deal designed to satisfy the needs of our culture and our peoples for not only from time immemorial, but for the future generations which will follow us. It's really a big concern of mine to be forced into the posture of defending ourselves and our lifestyle with 8 years to go in which to make some rather serious corporate decisions with reference to land ownership, and then look at the mistakes we've made, which, among others, I've learned from, and I've participated in the mistakes. But the point being, at least give us a chance, perhaps another 15 or 20 year period, in which to review our situation so that we can deal with the future and we could have the time to analyze our stance with reference to dealing with Chevron USA or Exxon or ARCO or SOHIO and their bank of attorneys and lawyers and policymakers whose main interest is making a profit for themselves and their stockholders, not looking out for the greater good of the Eskimo people of Alaska. And so it's these concerns which I have, which are really not being addressed by reason of the squeeze in time in which we're forced to address them. And yet, when you look at the basic problems we have here and the laws of America, and you recognize that you can't be prejudiced and you can't be a bigot, but every time you got to be fair to the white man, you have to take away some of the rights of the native people. and you could look at it from the East Coast, from when the Indians welcomed the Pilgrims and started sharing everything. That's when everything started going to hell. And it's still happening now. And the resources right on our water doorstep here in Norton Sound are going to be part of that same cycle. They're not here because they're our friends. They're here because they want to make a profit. And now, along with Alaska Public Land Law and Land Law of America, they're opening up the rest of the state and in our neighborhoods for settlement before they've even addressed the fact of giving us title to our traditional lands. And the difficulty I have with reference to our tribal lands and our historic place in life is there's reference to a petition made by the elders of St. Michael in 1940s, which was sent to Washington, D.C. in 1948, which referred to laws which recognize the protection obligations of the United States government in a law passed in 1884. Now, it brings to mind the fact that if our people were concerned about protecting ourselves in 1884, they were concerned about it prior to then, and that's why the law came into being. Now, comes now the Act of 1906, the Native Allotment Act, and the IRA Act of 1934, amended in 1936. You get the Land Claims Act in 1971, and the Alaska Public Land Law, which followed, and already before they've even addressed the fact of surveying our lands for tribal ownership from the law in 1884, we're dealing with giving people rights to settle our lands in 1984, and our rights have not even been recognized, and our lands in total haven't been surveyed. And we're in a defensive posture to protect our subsistence lifestyle, and yet the state and federal laws allow for professional hunters to come onto our lands and kill the moose and reindeer and call it caribou for the racks. And those of us who are in the villages without permanent jobs can't compete with airplanes. And so we're faced with a no-win situation of what are we going to do to protect ourselves and deal with corporate America in the process. There are rather deep philosophical questions with reference to why the Land Claims Act was passed, but the basic motive and why Congress went along with it was because the oil industry knew they could make better than $50 billion off of this deal. And all it costed was $962.5 million and 40 million acres of land. And in the process of surveying it, they're already dividing us and conquering us and having corporations make deals with oil companies. And a village here has a good deal, but village here doesn't have anything because of their lack of sophistication. And so we're faced with a decimation of our culture because the oil companies were ready to accept the Land Claims Act, but not because they love us, because they want profit. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Well, would anybody else like to speak this afternoon? We've had 50 and more people speak here in Nome, and I think that's a very good turnout. I don't. It certainly has been helpful to me, and I think it's been a very useful couple of days. But
like to thank you, Mr. Berger, or is it Berger? I'm sorry.
Either
will do. For making.
Just don't say hamburger.
Okay, there you go. For allowing me this time to make a few comments and so forth for some of my experiences within the last 10 years, both associated with Bering Straits Native Corporation and Sitnasauk Native Corporation. My name is John Garrison. Like I've said before, I've been associated with the Act more or less underneath the land realm than any monetary investments or whatever. I'd like to go over a few of some of my notes that I had, but I wish I had something more prepared at this time, but I'll just go ahead and read down some of my own feelings concerning my thoughts of what happened in the past when it came to any land issues and so forth. I have resided here in Nome for the last 10 years. I have moved up to Nome in April 1974. During that time, I worked for Bering Straits in the land department underneath various bosses and so forth. From that April of 1974 through January of 1977, then also I was employed by Sitnasauk Native Corporation from about that same time to the present. During my first part of my employment with Bering Straits, I was in charge of the land selections, not only for the region's entitlement under Section 12B of ANCSA, 14H 1 and 2, and also 14H 8, but also the village's acreage calculations and final legal descriptions of their selections, and also hand delivering these selections to the two BLM offices, one in Fairbanks and one in Anchorage. By the time the corporations had been incorporated, which was approximately back in 1972 when the majority of them were incorporated, and I'd like to also note that many villages were still wondering whether or not they were going to be eligible to be to have benefits underneath the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. The villages, the village people had new concepts that they needed to familiarize themselves with. First of all, what was a section line, township and range lines, core townships, withdrawals. The list can go on and on. I'll just give a few more. Deficiency withdrawals, navigable waters, mineral surveys, material or mineral patents, town site surveys, T&M sites, navigational sites, public land orders, executive orders, secretary orders, D2 legislation, state of Alaska quitclaim deeds, documents of mineral potential, also what they felt was subsistent values for themselves, and they had to recognize village future needs, protection, and most important, the protection of wildlife habitat for themselves, since they were in that type of economy. What ANCSA did that was testified before, it did bring some monies out to the villages to help them along, create new jobs and so forth, and make them more or less self-based within their own villages to help get them over the winter months and so forth, rather than relying on any federal or state aids. During the same time, back these years, you could see that there was a lot of things that were happening during that two-year period since I had initially started with Bering Straits, and they're working. The land selection deadline was December 18th for the villages in 1974. So during the same time, BLM was in the region talking about easements, and it shortly became BSNC policy to request BLM to stay out until the villages were ready soon after, hopefully, to start listening to BLM and having some new inputs on these. I might make note that a lot of these easements and so forth were being proposed without any justification or real standards as to use and sizes. And this finally did come out, at least I think it was 3 years later when they first initially proposed them, and then cut back and said, well, these are against rules and regulations. And so I'm glad our region stuck to their guns and said, BLM, don't come around and talk. Let's get our land selections done first. To give you an example, at one time, Sitnasauk Native Corporation, who I work for now, had some 200 easements proposed by various state, federal, and private organizations. And it was even an organization I'd like to mention one, Trout Unlimited, which they wanted to reserve an easement along all fish habitat, streams, rivers, and the like. Another one that was quite large that I thought was kind of out of the question, they wanted to request 15-mile-wide reindeer corridors, which I thought was kind of strange, federal government proposing that.
Signs indicating which way they should be headed.
Right. Well, I'd like to also make something in that regard, too. Upon review of most of these easements, SNC had to object to a lot of the easements because adjacent landowners who had no proposed or similar easements reserved on their patents and so forth. In many occasions, SNC had a parcel of land isolated by other patents, but were still required to have an intermittent easement to cross our lands and no guarantee to cross over over other patents and so forth that did not require the same easements as we were. Even though the village conveyances show rough drawn easement maps to which if you make an on-ground check that they're not even state, which invites trespass and damage in these locations because of their uses. I personally feel that many of the villages throughout the state had lost potential revenues also on federal and state special use material sites. Within the Nome area, we've seen a lot of road construction going on, and we have lost out due to the fact that prior reserves for some material sites and so forth, the state was conveyed the right to use those material sites that the villages were not able to have selections on. Excuse me. Because of the selection dates being so close to the conception of a lot of the villages, much of the lands that proved to be important to the villages were not made available for their selection rights underneath ANCSA. When I first went to work for Bering Straits Native Corporation, I had noticed that many of the federal agency lands were withdrawn for lighthouse purposes, defense purposes, old school sites, etc. But if I remember right, when I first started working, that there was an inventory, a catalog of these agencies with these land holdings, and they felt that a lot of these lands were not needed to the maximum, so that they were going to be excess from the federal agency holdings. But as you can see, within that two-year realm, even the federal government did not have enough time to go back and make a lot of these selections available to the villages. Give you an example here in Nome, we've already gotten through one such selection, which was determined under 3E as selectable by CITNSOC, but once again, because of this oversight and such a close date that we had to spend some a great amount of money in attorney's fees and consultant fees, and then also dealing with records and correspondence and staff time, and as well as our own board time, to try to get these lands selectable by the village, and to which we are not compensated for. A few other things I kind of like to make a few comments on. Even though the selection days were pretty rough, we only had 2 years to complete it. Actually, I only had about 9 months to get all the villages done, but there's also other amendments and so forth that the villages had to do after the selection dates, and then other selection dates by the region. To this day, there's a lot of these same lands and so forth that are not known whether they're going to be conveyed to the village, whether it's going to be conveyed to a mineral entry application, and so forth. And potential, if we had the individual right within the last 10 years, we had loss of chances of revenue to carry our own weight through taxation or whatever, and at least giving the benefit to the doubt to our own shareholders in the way of dividends. Excuse me. Much of the confusion that hindered land selections are in the past, but there's a few things that are in the future and at the present and not too far past that that everybody's going to have to be faced with at one time or another. We have already lived through the coastal zone management. I feel that this is probably something that should have taken place quite a few years ago, but I'm glad it did happen. There are some pros and cons about it, but I feel that, you know, any laws and so forth can be subject to change by the general public. One thing that Sitnasak had lived through, which was annexation, that Nome had requested their petition for annexation. At one time, they wanted to go all the way from Cape Nome to the mouth of Sinuk River and beyond. It covered at least over 100,000 acres of land, of Sitnasak selected lands and so forth. And at the present time, because of the rules and regulations, and they had to hold hearings and so forth, we were able to have it held down within at least a 12 to 15 mile square radius around the city itself here. In the future, we're looking at 14C reconveyance issues, recognizing prior existing rights to other individuals prior to ANCSA, which was December 18, 1971. BLM has more or less given the villages somewhat of a bad deal because they should have been out there policing their own lands. So they give the problems over to the villages under 14C reconveyances, saying, hey, these guys, they're not out there underneath a mineral patent application, not under native allotment or home site, and so forth. And it's going to cost the villages quite a bit of money. I know there's at least three or four villages within the region that are being faced with this. Sitnasak will have to do the same, follow suit. I know for a fact down in the Chelista region, there's an individual parcel of land that probably consists no more of 5 acres, but so far it's cost $40,000 because of some conflicts in the of the idea. It's quite possibly that the individual was turned down underneath a T&M site application by the Bureau, and then patent was not issued, but only to a smaller partial of the application. And the individual feels that he has rights to the remainder of it, even though he was returned down by the federal government. Another issue I'd like to point out, too, is that a lot of the villages will be receiving a lot of the different right-of-ways, at least the general administration over those, but they still have to fall within the rules and regulations that were established at the time it was reserved, which might have been back in the 1950s and the 1970, or early 1970, and also the 60s. So they're being turned over a lot of documents that they really don't know what their rights are on. I was feeling that the federal government should have kept those if they were not going to convey those to us outright, that they should have kept those different types of right-of-ways. At this time, we would thank you very much for coming to Nome, and I hope to see you folks around once again. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Mr. Garrison, and for outlining the problems of land selection. Thank you. Well, thanks very much, all of you who participated this afternoon. It's been a good afternoon's discussion. We'll adjourn now. Should we come back at 7 o'clock? Well, we'll come back again at 7 o'clock, just in case we missed anybody who wants to come down and speak. I think just about everyone's been heard from, but we'll be here at 7 o'clock tonight, just in case. So thanks very much. Thank you.
ahead. Your PA won't be on yet, but go ahead.
Oh, okay, fine. Well, thanks for coming tonight. This is the last hearing that we'll be holding in Nome, and we've had a very good turnout these last 2 days, yesterday and today, and we thought we had assembled tonight just to see if we had missed anybody who wanted to come and say a few words. So if anybody does wish to say something, maybe you could walk over to this microphone here, seated beside me, and just take a seat and tell me what your views are. I won't go into my long speech about what we're doing and some of the problems of ANCSA, because I assume you've heard it on the air or been here yourselves. So if anybody would like to add a few words tonight, this is your chance. Does the
PA is working? Yes.
Yeah. Well, I'd hate to think that we're going to get an early an early night. But
my name is Father Carlin. I'm with St. Joseph's Catholic Church here in Nome. I had the good fortune Saturday, Mr. Berger, of I think it was Saturday or Friday, meeting your colleagues who are here tonight in their door-to-door publication of these hearings. And I was very impressed at that they went door-to-door and tried to get to all the people and let them know and encourage them to come, and that was very moving to me. And we prepared a little announcement in our own bulletin and in our own words to the people, and I just found myself saying that afternoon to the folks who came to Mass Saturday afternoon, what would Alaska be without the native people? What would Alaska be without the native people? It's very encouraging to me, who am a lay person in this field, that a good, honest, and critical look is being taken by the native people themselves about issues concerning their future. Alaska's most valuable resource is its people, and we who come from other places to Alaska respect the people who are already here for centuries and their ways, their outlooks, their contributions. And we feel very encouraged by this commission and by this study. And so I just like to say that obviously we wish you well in this most critical study, and your support of the people in their studying the issues. And we would like to think that we support you by our prayers, and we hope to translate some of that prayerfulness into study, more study, and more concern ourselves for the issues involved. And so that's my only message tonight. May God bless you in your work and support your work. Thank you,
Father.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.